When we had our border collie, Rusty, he was so different from our other two dogs that I felt rather bewildered. I had, of course, researched the breed, but nothing had fully prepared me for the whirlwind I had unleashed upon myself and everyone else in the house. I was searching on the internet on the phrase 6-month-old border collie when I came across Renee Promes's moving account of her experiences with border collie Jack. Two things immediately hit me. The first was that my problems with Rusty were not as huge as I had thought. And secondly, I really wanted to interview Renee and share her story with others. First of all, I wanted to know how Jack came into her life, but she wanted to get one thing straight first.
First of all, before I even tell you that, I think that I don't know how many people in this world believe things are meant to be. Sometimes I think they are, sometimes it doesn't matter. I mean, but his arrival here, I really truly believe in my heart, had a purpose. And wherever he is now, I hope he's helping somebody else, only in a much different way.
Yeah.
I adopted Jack actually from my own family members who had gone to a shelter initially to get a cat. And the shelter worker, I won't give you my opinion of this person, but the shelter worker said to them, we have the most beautiful 3-month-old border collie in another room. Would you like to go see this dog? And they went in there and they took him home. The only thing they knew about a border collie was that one of their neighbors had a border collie and the neighbor lived on a farm. And every time they would go to this farm for produce, they saw the border collie and he was very well behaved. And in their minds, they must have figured, like a lot of other people do when they latch onto a particular breed, that all border collies are just quiet and calm and wonderful and perfect. So they brought him home and, I honestly don't know how long it was before they started to realize they literally bit off more than they could chew. So we would go there for dinner sometimes, and I knew they had a dog named Jack, and I would say, where's Jack? Oh, he's down the basement, so he won't bother us while we're eating. So I remember during one visit, I said, where is he? I'd like to see him. So they opened the basement door, and he was down there in his crate. And at that time, they did not take him out of the crate because they said that, no, we want to visit with you. We don't want to really, you know, be bothered. And keep in mind, during this time, I was not a trainer. I was an average pet owner who had had dogs before, and I was in a situation where I had lost a dog about 6 months prior, and I swore I wasn't going to get another one. So we hear that all the time. So several months later, I got a call from my family members who said that you guys have a horse farm, and if you can't take Jack, then we're going to take him back to the shelter. He's just not behaving here. He's a problem. We're having issues with him. So I talked to my husband, and I thought, well, I would like to have another dog. You know, I kind of missed having a dog around, and I did love dogs all the time, my whole life. So I went and visited with them, went up there by myself, went to visit them, and I saw a beautiful, beautiful border collie. I didn't know anything about the breed either. And I never studied breeds, per se, because it wasn't my job at that time. So I knocked at the door, and when she opened the door, she quickly handed me a biscuit, and she said, give Jack a biscuit, and he'll like you. So I said, okay. So I gave him the biscuit, and he chomped on it, and he was fine. I walked into the house, and he was a gentleman. He didn't jump on me. I didn't see any bad behavior at that time, and I said, let's go for a walk. Let me see if I can take him for a walk. So she put the leash on him, and we walked around the neighborhood, and I held the leash, and he walked quite nicely with me. He didn't pull. He didn't misbehave. And so we walked for about a half an hour, And then we went back to my relative's house, and we sat down on the steps outside of her house. So I sat on like the second step down, and Jack sat down next to me on the top step. He was wonderful. He sat there nicely while I reached around him and petted him, had my hand over his back, petted him. He didn't snarl. He didn't growl. He was wonderful. And again, I had no clue that what I could have done that day could have gotten my face bitten off by some other dog.
Mm.
You know, this dog didn't know me from page 8.
No.
So we went in the house for a while, and she started to give me a little clue about what the issues were. And so she said he gets very possessive over things. I said, well, what things? She says, well, sometimes he gets possessive over food, like if he gets a bone to chew on, or he'll get possessive over a ball. He likes to play with the ball, but he won't let you have it, and if you try to take it, he gets really upset. He kind of growls. So I said, okay, let me see if I can play ball with him. And so that's when I saw there was a problem. What Jack was doing was he was loving the fact that we were engaged in a game of fetch, and then he would bring the ball back, and then he would drop it on the floor, and I reached for it, and then I heard a growl. So I quickly pulled my hand back, and I didn't take the ball. So I thought, I don't know what this is, but I didn't like getting growled at. So I finished the visit. It was okay. Nobody got bitten or anything like that. I just decided, okay, it's not such a great idea to play ball with him. And I went home and I talked to my husband about it. And I said, you know, I did a little reading about this breed, and they're farm dogs. So we'll bring him down here. There'll be plenty for him to do. He'll be around because we have a horse farm. And there'll be things, you know, we have 30 acres he can run around. I mean, a lot of our farm is fenced in. And he'll, you know, and we're going to discipline him, meaning that, you know, we're going to set rules for him, and we're not going to spoil him.
Mm.
But in my mind, in those days, discipline meant you do what I say or else. I mean, that's all we knew in those days. That was a long time ago.
Mm.
I'd always been taught to use a choke collar and use leash corrections and things like that. So this was in my mind. Okay, I know how to train a dog to walk on a leash, and I know how to discipline a dog, so I'll provide some discipline in his life. So he came home to here, and he bit me on my hands every day for a little more than a month, I would say.
Wow.
And I didn't know what to do. At that time I had AOL on my computer, and I was very, very fortunate to find groups, email discussion groups for each breed. I mean, it was wonderful. If you liked Spaniels, there was an email group for Spaniel owners who talked with one another and gave each other advice. The Border Collie group was lots and lots of people who were having difficulties with their dogs and seemed to be experts on the subject. So I started to go on that list every day, and I began to describe the problems that I was having. And they, honestly, I got the best advice, and I was fortunate that these people were not negative trainers. They were all positive, and one of the first things they advised me to do was to seek out a trainer who uses positive reinforcement. So I dutifully did that, not even knowing what the heck positive reinforcement dog training was all about.
Mm.
So I was very fortunate again. I found a trainer who was less than 5 miles away from me. And I approached her and talked to her about it. And she said, well, bring him here and I'll do private training with you in my office, because she has a training facility. And we'll start working with him. And she taught me all about clicker training. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, you know, one of the things that my email list advised me to do was when you do find a trainer, go to one of her classes and observe and make sure you're comfortable with what she's doing, which mm-hmm. is excellent advice. Really, mm-hmm. I'm so grateful to these people. So I did go and observe. Now, keep in mind, I knew nothing about positive training, and when I went to observe a class without my dog, I see everybody with these treat bags shoving treats in the dog's mouth, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. Look what they're doing. I mean, they look ridiculous giving these dogs treats all the time.
Mm.
So anyway, I figured, well, this woman, you know, knows more about dogs than I do, and I really wanted to help the dog. Even though he was biting me, where he had some redeeming qualities, you know, and I really was getting attached to him.
Yeah.
I just needed to stop the biting.
Mm.
So I did. She was wonderful. She was very kind. I went there four times a week for about an hour and a half in her office. She taught me how to use the clicker. And we very, very carefully desensitized him to having his collar grabbed, which would set him off really bad,
mm-hmm.
To having me or her brush him,
mm-hmm.
To having people approach him and greet him by reaching your hand out to him, by trying to desensitize him to all of his handling issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we took it a step at a time. It was the most educational experience I ever had in my life.
Yeah. I mean, when I use the term lovely to describe the story, what I mean is that he found the right person who, you know, as you say, you were getting attached to him. You had the love and the patience and the perseverance, you know, to look past those problems and say, no, I'm going to work through this. And I mean, the detail, when I read the article, the detail, like the false hand that you used to desensitize him initially, I mean, it was a very long, involved process, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I worked, we did the private training for 4 months, and I have to tell you, she could have charged me between $50 and $100 a day to do this. She charged me $10.
Wow.
I mean, she made no money from this, but I think that she saw how anxious I was to help the dog. And later, after, you know, many months of working with her, she told me, you're the perfect owner for him because everything I tell you to do, you do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the hardest things I had to do, she said to me, before you come back to your next visit, I want you to go home. I want you to learn how to put a basket muzzle on him, and I want you to clip his nails. I said, you got to be kidding. She said, no, this is what I want you to do. So I did it. I just figured it out myself. She taught me kind of how to desensitize him to a basket muzzle, and I put a plate of treats right in front of him. I mean, he couldn't eat the treats because he was muzzled, but he saw the treats. And so I would clip the very tip of a nail, he would get a treat through the wires of the muzzle. And then he would, I would clip the next nail and he would get a treat. So if I can remember back that far, I think I may have clipped one or two nails and he was okay, but I could see he was getting antsy. And so I took the muzzle off and that training session was done for the day.
Yeah.
You can't push a dog past his threshold, and you really do have to watch the dog's body language. And for the life of this dog in my home, even a few years later when I felt comfortable doing certain things, I always put the muzzle on him when I clipped his nails, and I always watched his body language.
Mm-hmm.
And if I felt that he was getting tense, I stopped what I was doing, tried to get him to relax, and if I felt that I could continue on, then I did.
Mm.
And he got lots of treats for doing the right thing because he had hot spots in his ears all the time. He had allergies and all kinds of things. So these hot spots in his ears were very, very painful, and I had to medicate him, and I found a great natural product anyway. So it got to a point where I didn't have to muzzle him to do his ears because he got nuked up hot dogs for treats, or he got cheese for treats for doing that. So there wasn't an issue with that anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, there were issues that he after all the training and all the behavior modification and desensitization, counter conditioning, the thing that never really went away totally was the nail clipping. I continued to use the muzzle for that. And I could take hold of his collar. And as long as I didn't put any pressure on it, I could get him to walk with me. There was one incident where he got into my corral, and I didn't want him getting his head kicked in from a very energetic thoroughbred in there. So he got in there, and I quickly took hold of his collar and just said, "Let's go," and he walked right out with me. But had I pulled on the collar, I'm sure even then I would have gotten bitten. He was a fascinating dog. You know, I mean, some people would have, would have given him up immediately. But there was a major incident, and it almost cost him his life. He bit his pet sitter. And I don't understand what happened till today. I've heard of stories of dogs doing this, but I'm not sure I completely understand the reason for it. She was a very tall woman. She loved him to death, and she sat for him after that, too. I couldn't believe it. So every time she would come sit for him, which wasn't all that often, I'd have her spend time with him, reacquainting, and so he would be comfortable with her when I would leave, maybe the next day, and she would stay at my house. She has that, and it was great. But what happened was, so the second time she came to reacquaint with him, things were fine, and I left them alone on my back patio while I went out and raked leaves, and all of a sudden I heard her screaming, "No, Jack, no, stop it." So I ran in the back there, and he had bitten her. Four puncture wounds, two on the front side, two on the palm. I mean, two on the palm and two on the back side. So it was a full mouth bite. He broke the skin. She was bleeding a little bit, and I made her go to the hospital to get the tetanus shot. Of course, I paid for that, and I was mortified, embarrassed. I just didn't know what to do. And so I talked to my husband, and I said, "What do I do?" And he said, you keep working with him. You know, he's been doing really good. We'll just keep working with him. But if it happens again, we're really going to have to think about, doing something pretty drastic here, because we didn't want to get sued. So that actually was the impetus for my finding the trainer. So I kind of told you a story a little backwards. That bite occurred, and then I went to get that trainer.
He had some quite odd triggers in a way, because he didn't like it. I can't remember if it was you or the trainer, when one of you sort of cocked your leg over
That was an interesting situation.
A staircase, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, tell us about that.
Well, during one of the private sessions with the trainer, we were gated off with a baby gate from one of the rooms and her office, so he couldn't get through. And we were sitting there working, and then her phone rang, and her receptionist had gone out or something. So her name was Barbara. So she put her leg up over the baby gate, and as soon as she did, he launched himself at her leg. Thank God he had a muzzle on. So we tried to desensitize him to that. That was another trigger we pulled out of him. And he never stopped. The reaction to her doing it got a little better. But when I did it, I got no reaction at all. So that was kind of strange. There was no reoccurrence, because at my home anyway, nobody could get a leg up over a fence. Somebody did put their finger through a fence to pet him, and he kind of nipped them. But it was like a little tiny inhibited warning thing. Hey, I don't like that. So that was another trigger. It was just an education and a half.
I bet. Do you, I mean, the he found the right person, and that's the happy part of the story.
Right.
The sad part is he died very young, didn't he? And
yes,
do you think, because he was six and he had liver disease, do you think that his health problems caused his...
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with a doctor, a vet, by the name of Jean Dodds.
No, no.
She is a pretty well-known veterinarian in the United States. She has done a lot of research about thyroid disease and about over-vaccination. She's vehemently against vets over-vaccinating dogs, and she's put out her own protocol. And she did a seminar, as a matter of fact, at the training center where I had taken Jack, several years later, and I, you know, during question and answers, I kind of talked to her about him, that he, you know, a full diagnosis couldn't be made, but I explained to her, I mean, I attended his necropsy. I mean, my vet was shocked that I could do that. I just wanted to make sure that his cause of death wasn't something that I caused. Mm. You know, you get the guilties. You want to make sure that, oh, my God, I hope I didn't do anything. And it was a very painful death, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
Everything was horrible about how he got sick and actually how he died.
Yeah.
But I gave her a lot of descriptions about the liver being smaller than it normal, about, you know, the symptoms that he had. And she diagnosed him as having chronic active hepatitis. Chronic active hepatitis, first of all, he had been on the absolute worst diet for that, which was chicken.
Hmm.
I don't remember the whole thing, but chicken has some, I don't remember if it's iron or copper or something, some element in chicken that this dog should never have had because he couldn't pass it off. He couldn't eliminate it because his liver wasn't functioning properly. So had I known that, I could possibly have extended his life.
Yeah.
I do believe that he probably was sick for a very, very long time and just didn't have any other way of telling anyone, hey, I don't feel 100% normal. Mm. He had a lot of digestive issues.
Mm.
He threw up a lot. So I was, you know, always dealing with that.
Mm.
So I do believe that for a long time that this dog had the disease.
You've talked about some things, you know, being meant to happen, and Jack coming into your life gave you a passion to go on and help other people, didn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it was amazing. Mm. I mean, I have to tell you, I was an owner. My husband and I owned a retail gift shop at a farmer's market not far from our home, and I had that store for, at that time, I would say for about 23 years, and was doing well. But once I started to learn and see the results that I was getting with clicker training and being in the training environment, my trainer invited me to be an assistant in her classes. Just as a thing, you know, would you like to come and assist me in some of my classes?
Mm.
I said, I'd love it. So she didn't know it at the time, but she actually became my mentor, you know, because I just learned so much. She was a wonderful trainer, I have to tell you. She was an absolute wonderful trainer. So I learned everything, and I didn't learn everything, but, you know, if somebody came up to her after class with a problem they were having with their own dog, I stayed behind. I listened to everything that she said.
Yeah.
And I was like a sponge. And so I did that for 2 years, and then I started to take on some private clients of my own, and I also attended an online college at the time, which was called Synology College. And so that's an online college, and you study on the computer, and you take tests, and so that's where I was taught learning theory, which is how dogs learn.
Mm-hmm.
What motivates dogs, how you do behavior modification, what is desensitization and counter conditioning. So while I was attending that school, I was also assisting, and then I was also taking on some private clients, and so the whole thing was just working beautifully.
Yeah.
And you can go to colleges, I could have gone to get a PhD in this subject, but until you go out, And you work with other dogs, and I saw other dogs that were very much like my dog, but I saw other situations, too, that I didn't know that much about. And
yeah.
to be honest with you, that is the only way you can really, really learn, is to go out there and work with clients. If something isn't, if it's not something that you feel that you can handle, you get help. You refer them out, and you go to the you go to those training sessions so you can see what the other trainer is telling them to do.
Yeah.
But you know, and even today, like if somebody calls me, and I've been doing this for over 10 years now, if somebody calls me with a problem, and I think to myself, well, I think I could plan something out, but I get a little bit nervous thinking, am I going to be able to help this dog? I don't think you ever stop having doubts like that until you get your feet wet, you go meet the dog, and then you plan out a behavior program. You plan out what you're going to do with the dog.
Mm.
So,
but I think the day that anybody thinks, I know everything now.
Right.
You're finished. You know?
Yeah, you so, must be. Because
yeah.
I don't think that you'll ever know everything.
No. And you've
closed and every
your
dog
mind.
Is every dog is an individual, and every dog will present you with its own set of issues.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, by the time you think I know the lot, you've closed your mind. So you know, it's not a great. I mean, I like everything you say, and I mean, you're a champion of positive methods, and you sort of say I train without pain, and that's your message, isn't it, to people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I saw how it worked. It hurts my heart when people call me and they say they've been using a shock collar or they're using a prong collar. It just hurts me to hear that. And so that's what I try to do. You know, I just want to keep the dogs out of shelters. If they're rescue dogs, I want to make sure that they remain in their homes. It's very, very important to me. I really do truly care about the dogs. And so I do it for me, and I do it for them, and I also do it to keep Jack's memory alive, because I think about him every day, and I thank him. You know, it's a shame that he had to live like he did, but, you know, he was meant to educate me, and because of it, all the good that I can do.
I mean, you also have a radio show, don't you, Thursday in the Doghouse?
Thursday in the Doghouse, right. I do that from a local radio station here. It's Sewell, New Jersey. It's a weekly program. I've since taken on a co-host, which I think makes it a little more colorful. And we interview experts in the field. We interview authors and trainers and veterinarians, very, very well-known veterinarians at times, like Dr. Dodman, Nicholas Dodman. We've interviewed recently Patricia McConnell, who actually my own trainer called her to get advice from her when we were working with Jack. And so it's I love the show, and again, we're educating listeners, and I have the podcasts on my website, jerseydogtrainer.com, and they're listed by subjects, and then the title of the show is given, and if people are interested in hearing them, they click on the link and they can hear any show they want, and it's about a 30-minute show.
I can really recommend people go and look at your website and definitely read the article about Jack, because it is a story that it touched my heart, and I'm sure it will touch other people's. And, you know, he was sort of a once-in-a-lifetime dog, and as you say, he was meant to be in your life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And every day it's a joyful experience to go out and helping people with their dogs. It really is. I mean, you know, sometimes things hurt you, or clients don't follow through, and they call you and they tell you that they're giving their dog up. But you just go forward, you know, because you can't save them all. That's the hardest thing you have to learn when you do this. You cannot save them all, and you can do what you can do to try to convince people that the methods that you're advising them to use will help the dog, but if they don't follow through, you know, people get lazy.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure you're helping lots and lots of dogs, and as you say, it's a great tribute to Jack.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
We have a link to Renee's website, where you can find out more about her and her radio show, and we also have a link to the article I read about Jack, which made me want to interview Renee so much. Jack may not have had as happy a life as he should, but he found the person who could give him the best life possible. And most importantly, he found in Renee someone who never gave up on him. Their story certainly inspired me to persevere with working through Rusty's issues. So if you're in need of inspiration, check out Renee's site.